I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to Oh Snapped. It is Oh Snapped. Oh Snapped, the show where we recap snapped episodes.
Okay.
Sums it up, right? Pretty much sums it up.
Yeah. It 100% sums it up.
It's exactly what we do. Yeah.
It exactly sums it up.
Yeah, if you're a fan of the show Snapped, you know, and you want to chat about it, here's your place.
You're in the right place.
Totally. This episode is wild for a lot of reasons. It's Terry Gilbert. Before we get into the case, though, just to, you know, let you know, we have an Instagram. Come hang with us there. You can let us know your thoughts on the case because we will post. We're supposed to do a post for every case, and we stopped for a while, but we'll start again. So that way you can chat with us about the case, tell us what you think, because this one is like one where I'm really interested to see what other people think about the outcome and all of it.
Yes, it's definitely not cut and dry. It's not black and white.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of conversation that can happen there, so.
For sure. And of course, if you like this show, want more episodes, and are okay with some curse words, check out Killer Queens. It is our other show where we just do, like, you know, cases every week. Check it out.
But also, if you like the show, please don't hesitate to leave us a review.
Oh, yeah, totally. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah, we enjoy reviews, and we enjoy hearing your thoughts on the show.
Yeah, totally. And they help other people decide if they want to give the show a chance. So, you know, it's helpful. But all that being said, shall we get into the case?
I've been waiting to.
Okay, all right.
August 18th, 1996 was a hot Sunday night in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Alone in her home office, Terry Gilbert heard the front door open. Terrified, she raced into the kitchen, grabbed her Smith & Wesson, and hid in the basement.
She could hear the man coming down the steps.
She screamed out several times, "Stop, stop, I have a gun."
But the intruder wouldn't stop.
She sees a silhouette, shouts a third time, "Who is it?" No answer, boom, boom, boom.
It wasn't the first time Terry shot an intruder in her home. And just like the last time, the intruder would turn out to be her husband.
Okay, so Terry Gilbert was alone in her home office when she said that she heard the front door open. She said it, like, creaked open. She ran into the kitchen and grabbed her Smith & Wesson, and she hid in the basement. Because at this point, from her story, she doesn't know anybody's coming over. She doesn't know who it would be. She says that she hears a man coming down the steps. She's calling out several times, "Stop, stop, I have a gun, I will shoot, who's there?" The man doesn't stop, he keeps coming towards her. She sees the silhouette and she says that she yells out again to stop, and he doesn't stop, so she fires three shots. And then, so, like, you know, we've been talking about this. In season two, they're kind of opening, they're playing around with their hooks a little bit or whatever. My jaw dropped.
Same.
When she said this. She goes, it wasn't the first time she shot an intruder in her home, and just like the last time, it would turn out to be her husband. I was like, the last time?
Right, exactly. I feel like they gave it all away. Yeah. I mean, there's more into the case, but I'm like, okay, why don't you just... It's like reading the last page of a book before you read the whole book.
Yeah, Yeah. Like, how often do you shoot, end up shooting intruders in your home and they both were her husband? Like, what in the world?
Well, it was reminiscent, and this is before I got into any of it, but hearing that, it was like, staircase? Like, how many times do you kill someone the same exact way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, and it be an accident and you didn't have anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right, so we got to go.
Got to go back.
Yeah, we got to go back, get some information here. In 1974, pretty young Terry Hotchkiss left her small trailer in Corrales, New Mexico, for a new life in Albuquerque. She was a recently widowed registered nurse and had a good head for business. She started her own medical consulting firm. And we speak to Juan Vigil, who's a friend and colleague of Gene Gilbert, who was Terry's husband at the time of this story, and said that
she was moving quite fast. She was doing a lot of the pharmacology work and also doing good liaison work.
She was super successful at it. She got to buy her own house at 1510 Roma Street near Albuquerque's historic old town. I'm sure it was beautiful.
Oh, I'm sure. Super picturesque.
Yeah. Quaint little house. Cute. Then, a few months after that, she met the man of her dreams, which was a recently divorced lawyer, Gene Gilbert. So, Gene was a very successful lawyer in the area, but he was also super well connected. He was very popular. He was involved in local government. He was kind of like in with the movers and shakers.
A man about town.
Exactly. They start dating. They're going out to eat all the time. They're being seen out in public all the time. People know them, you know, together now. Mm-hmm. And all their friends said they were made for each other, and less than a year later, they were married. Pretty whirlwind romance.
They just clicked immediately, it seems like.
Yeah, totally. So by that time, Terry was 28. This was her third marriage, and this was Jean's second marriage.
That's a lot. That's very Ross of her. From friends. I mean, that's, no shade, but it's a lot for a 28-year-old. Three marriages.
Yeah.
This isn't like Civil War times.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, you have to forget about Elizabeth. I mean, if you're not careful, you may not get married at all this year.
But they moved into Terry's house, which, I don't know, maybe he, because I guess he was recently divorced, so maybe his ex-wife got their house or something, but I was just kind of surprised because he's supposed to be this very successful, wealthy kind of guy, but he moves into her house.
Well, now, Torella, you're being a little sexist. She's successful and wealthy as well. She's got her own stuff going on, so. Well, and that was the house of her dreams. Plus, it was a great location.
Oh, yeah, totally. I just thought,
you're just trying to play into gender roles. That's what you're trying to do.
Well, I'm kind of saying, like, where is all his money going because he can't even afford to buy a house?
Maybe he wasn't ready. Maybe he was living in an apartment. You don't know the whole story. And that is a testament to Snapped.
Yeah.
We give you a lot of details.
We have no details. But, I mean, the reason I am even going down that road is because his money spending comes into play later. So I'm just wondering if this was, like, kind of already an
issue.
Should
have been a red flag.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Like, but I mean, if he was recently divorced, he may have been living in an apartment, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, you know, whatever. And I know Terry can do bad all by herself. She don't need no man to buy her house.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I just, wondered if that was like foreshadowing a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So she was running her business from home, and Jean was minutes from the Albuquerque courthouse at this house. Like you said, great location. And he had a successful law practice, but he was also getting into local politics. And he started, they didn't really, again, say much there. I don't know if he was like running for something or.
Well, they talk about in this very next part that by 1988, Gene had become a fixture on the Bernalillo County Commission. And that's kind of the only thing that they talk about when it comes to a political, political arena.
Yeah, because they say, like, his political career, but I guess, do you have to run for I don't even know what county commissioner is.
Girl, yeah, I don't even know.
Is that like a comptroller?
No idea.
Yeah. So he's on the county commission. Terry is like the first lady of the county commission, basically.
Yes, she's very for Jackie O.
Yeah. They were going to like rallies, community events. She was very supportive of her husband. She was always
like pumping his tires.
Yeah. Kind of speaking really highly of him, taking care of him, all that kind of stuff. Jean also talked about his wife in a positive way. So it seemed like from the outside world that everything was going great, that they were a super happy couple, that they had this like marriage that other people wanted to emulate because they both spoke highly of each other. It wasn't this thing where they were like, you know, old ball and chain and
rolling their eyes at each other's. Yeah.
It just seemed like everything was going great. But after 16 years of marriage, it was going downhill. Pretty quickly.
Yes. John Garcia, who was another friend and colleague of Jean, said that you started to hear rumors that they were separated and breaking up, but then when they were together in front of other people, everything seemed like it was okay. But the thing is, things were not okay. Terry had just found out that Jean was cheating on her with a fellow attorney named Mary Baca, and the relationship had been going on for 4 years. When I heard 4 years, because I was like, okay, this is not a new scenario. Okay. And then the narrator says the relationship had been going on for 4 years. I was like, oh, like I audibly gasped.
I did too. Yeah. Because when she said four, I was like, definitely going to be 4 months, which is still a long time. Yeah. 4 years he'd been hiding this. Like,
yes,
it's ridiculous.
Terry felt that she had no choice but to file for divorce.
Understandable.
Right. Of course. Yeah. Once she started the divorce filing, she started to have second thoughts. So she's talking to Jean, right? Jean's like, I will stop seeing Mary. I want to make this work. So he moved back into the house because I guess she kicked him out after that. Moved back into the house. But the affair keeps going on. Jean does not keep his word. And he keeps seeing Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually Terry just had to accept it.
Yeah, I guess it was one of those things where she just decided, if I want to keep my marriage, I'm just going to have to deal with the fact that he's going to cheat on me, which is awful.
It's terrible. And that is not what Tammy Wynette meant when she said, stand by your man.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So Dr. Diana Falkenbach, the forensic psychologist, said that Terry may have been in a situation where she just doesn't want to give up her life. Like, I don't know, maybe that outward appearance kind of thing. I don't know, where she just like wants it to look like she's still happy. Or, I mean, there are people who just love their spouse so much that
they can feel like they can look the other way on certain things.
Mm-hmm. For 4 more years, despite the affair that is still ongoing.
Yeah, so at this point now we're in year eight.
Yeah, of this affair. They seem like they were doing better. And then the narrator says, then in January 1996, Terry learned that Jean had overextended himself and was in deep financial trouble. His law office wasn't making money and he owed money to everyone from the IRS to the state of New Mexico. I'm like, that's not overextending.
No, what it's a not word. Like he double booked himself or like took on too much at the law practice, like too many jobs that he's got going on. Like,
because, when she said he'd overextended himself, I'm like, oh, so you're going to say, yeah, he's basically
like working himself ragged.
Yeah, stretched too thin, volunteered at too many functions or something at one time. No, he owes money to the IRS, to the state of New Mexico, all these things. Literally, the only asset they had left was the house that they lived in.
But it was Terry's house because she bought it before they got married.
That's
right.
So it's
her asset, not theirs.
Mm-hmm. And he wanted her to refinance the house so that he could get the equity out of it and pay the money back. And I don't know if it was going to be all of the money back, but he needed to get everything he could out of that house.
Mm-hmm. He needed a big chunk of money to appease whoever he was owing.
Yeah. And Terry didn't want to do it. And I don't freaking blame her.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, that's my house. Like, I bought this house. You've been cheating on me for almost 10 years now.
I was going to say, you have not been faithful. You are not the picture of perfection when it comes to husbands. Why should I put my well-being and the thing that I worked the hardest for on the line?
Right.
So you can continue probably to lie to me.
Yeah, exactly. And he's done something not good at all with his money. I mean, that's not overextending. That's not like, oh, well, I loaned, you know, some money to a friend and maybe I didn't have it, but I was trying to help him, like whatever. That's not what happened here. I mean, again, we don't get a ton of information about it, but he literally put them in a situation financially where they could lose their home and everything else they have. So yeah, I don't blame her for wanting to protect the asset she has left.
Exactly.
So he's not hearing that, though. He's like, okay, he just keeps asking her and asking her and asking her. And he's starting to try to pressure her more and more and more to refinance the house. And she's getting more and more angry about it because she doesn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's like, the fact that he has a girlfriend is bad enough. And now he wants my home? I don't think so. So she kicked him out. And she said she was done with him forever, but they started seeing each other again pretty soon after that.
It seems like they are this, like, he's this forbidden, not forbidden fruit. He's got some kind of spell over her or something. Like, they are drawn to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about him that she can't let go of. And like Dr. Falkenbach says, you know, he says he's sorry and she wants to believe him. I don't know. I mean, obviously she believes that he is going to change because she keeps giving him these chances and he keeps telling her he's going to stop the affair. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. He doesn't keep his word on any of that stuff. And she wants to believe him. It's it's sad.
But they're kind of like merry-go-round of her kicking him out and then her wanting him back and her kicking him out and wanting him back. It kind of reminds me, it's not the same, but it reminds me of Friends again, because everything in my life is like a Friends episode. I can bring it back there. But when Janice is like, I call out to you, you hear me, it's Janice. And she's like, you want me, you need me, you just don't know you need me.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I knew exactly what you were going to say when you were like, Janice. I was like, Janice. Yeah, they're definitely drawn to each other in some way. I think for Jean, it's more financial.
It's like a business agreement almost. Like he knows what he can get out of her, which is a stable. Or he can mess up and she'll come in and save the day. Uh-huh. She's the security there.
Yeah. But this time, it seemed like Jean was really making the effort to clean up his act. Randy McGinn, one of Terry's defense attorneys, said that within weeks of moving out of her house, he went out and bought a $100,000 insurance policy on her life. Jean went out and bought it on Terry's life. She wrote in her diary that she couldn't believe he was being so responsible now that I've asked him to move out. And again, she's looking at this as he's growing up. He's starting to be responsible. Like, it's a positive spin for her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that says just, I mean,
what's he going to do to you? Because we're talking about, we have murder podcasts.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, where's the hitman? Like you know.
You in danger, girl.
Yeah, exactly. A couple months later, he surprised her with weekend tickets to Las Vegas. And Terry was thinking, maybe Jean is really changing. Maybe he does really love me. Maybe he is trying to get back together with me. Like, all those things. And and I am also thinking, he is in financial ruin and he's buying tickets to Vegas. You're going to pay for that.
Yeah, exactly. That is not the most responsible thing to do right now.
Exactly. Like, you don't need to be doing that. But I think he knew that that was kind of a big gesture that would go a long way for her. Yeah, and it did. Because by the time they got back, like, they were holding hands on the airplane on the way back, he asks her again to refinance the house and give him the equity because he needs it. And this time she says yes. And so literally when they got back to New Mexico, they went straight to the bank and she signed the refi papers. Like, wasted no time. He didn't want her to change her mind, I guess.
But a few days later, while she's looking over some of the debts that he had accrued, she sees a charge for $14,504 that Gene made with Mary, his 8-year-long lover.
Mm-hmm.
And Terry's like, this is too much. So she cancels the refi and she told Gene to get out for good.
Yeah. I was thinking, like, when that happened, good for her. Like, you know, I mean, he's been stringing her along. Like, obviously, he's not stopping this affair. Obviously.
He has no plans to.
No. And he's continuing to be reckless with his money and expecting her to pay the bill. I mean, it's disrespectful.
100%.
4 months later, shortly before 10 p.m. on August 18th, a call came into the Albuquerque 911. The address was 1510 Roma Street, and the caller was Terry Gilbert. And I think she does sound legitimately shaken in that call. And I know you can't judge that because there are people who can make them sound...
They're good actors.
Yeah.
Right?
But it sounds real to me.
Yes.
I think. So the police get to her house. They said she was sitting calmly on the sofa in the living room. She pointed to the basement stairs, and when they looked, they saw a man laying at the bottom of the stairs in a pool of blood. There was a small handgun laying by his side. EMTs worked on the victim, and detectives took Terry in for questioning. She told police around 9:30 that she was alone in her home office. I have some questions about this in a few minutes. Vicky Duran, a detective, said that she heard the door creak open. She hears footsteps. She calls out a few times and she doesn't hear an answer. So she's scared. She runs to the kitchen to get her 9mm Smith & Wesson. She runs into the basement and she hid behind a clothes rack. She said she could hear the footsteps overhead coming to the basement. She said she screamed out multiple times, "Stop, stop, I have a gun, I'll shoot." The figure continued to come toward her. She said she let the man get to 6 feet away from her before she fired the 3 shots. Then she threw down the gun and ran upstairs to call 911. It seemed like a clear-cut case of self-defense until the police learned who the victim was.
Spoiler alert, we already know.
Yeah. So, when police learn that the victim is Jean, they're asking her in the interrogation room, "Do you know who you shot?" And she's like, "Yeah, I'm afraid that I do." And they're like, "Well, who?" And she's like, "I think it was Jean." And they say, "Yeah, you did shoot Jean."
And she, like, becomes unhinged and, like, becomes hysterical.
Yeah, she loses it. And her defense attorney was like, you know, she was so distraught. How could she have killed this man, you know, that she loves? Like, she says at the time she didn't know it was him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the narrator said it was about to get worse because not one of the cops believed Terry's story. And the detective, Vicky Duran, was just like, it just didn't mesh with me. Like, she's like, I don't know, call it a hunch or whatever, but I couldn't see someone staying in a house with a person you just shot, not knowing if they were alive or dead or coming after you. That doesn't say anything to me at all. Like, she shot him 3 times and he didn't move and she had to step over him to get upstairs. I don't know. I'm not sure that...
I don't know if that by itself is proof that she killed her husband on purpose.
You know what I mean? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that doesn't... It's like, maybe she knew he was dead.
Yeah.
Police went back to the house to see if the physical evidence matched Terry's story. Okay, here's another thing. So Vicky's like, we tested the door because she remembers she said it creaked open. Well, it didn't creak when we opened it. That's not a scientific test.
No.
Like, how many times do, like, there'll be sometimes I open a door and it creaks and then sometimes it doesn't, or my husband opens it a certain way, you know, like.
Well, and I feel like different environmental factors can play into that. Let's say that it's like super, humid outside. Well, that changes things. If it's the time of day, how hot it is. I'm sure all these things play into that kind of stuff. And it's different how somebody opens the door, how slowly they open the door.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's what I was going to say. If you open it more slowly, I feel like it's got more of a chance to creak. If it goes fast, then maybe not. Like,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was like,
I just like the grasping at straws. It's like, it's not.
Yeah, she said the door creaked and it didn't creak when I opened it. I'm like, okay, well, that's not.
Lock her up. She's a murderer.
Yeah, like, that's not enough. Then they sat at Terry's desk in her office and they could see Jean's truck parked out in front in plain sight. So they said she had to have known that it was him walking in because you could see his truck from her desk. Now, here's my question,
though. Okay, you go ahead. You asked your question.
Okay. Well, they make a big deal about the fact that she doesn't have her glasses or contacts in when she's in the basement. And they're saying, like, how could she see the person coming at her? She doesn't have her glasses or contacts in. She just shoots whatever. What is she doing at her desk in her home office with no glasses or contacts in?
I have no idea.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Poked her head in for a second or something. I don't know. That there's a lot of holes in these stories. Mm-hmm. My question for that was, did they test this in the daytime? Because you can see a lot of things in the daytime. And if it was at night and there's no fog lights or, you know, some kind of a security light, like, maybe you don't see it. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I just feel like these tests that they're running, not proving a ton.
Yeah, none of this is scientific.
Concrete
none of
evidence.
This, yeah, none of this is definitive. It's I can see or I can't see. And then they checked where she said she hid in the basement. So it was like in a closet, kind of, with like, there's like clothes hanging behind her. And then there's like, I don't know, clothes stacked up in front. So she would kind of be like under the clothes rack. And they said, we checked where she said she hid in the basement. And it didn't look like anybody had been hiding there. What does that mean? Like, if the person is no longer hiding there, then you can't, it's not like it leaves a, like, you don't leave like fairy dust
footprints
when you hide somewhere. Or yeah, it's like, what do you expect to find there? Like, she squizzed into a spot, you know? Like, when my kids hide all over the house, once they leave where they've hidden, it's not immediately evident where they were hiding. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's like, okay, the kid was under the table. Well, he got out from under the table. I can't tell that he was there or not. Doesn't matter.
You don't leave a residue.
Like, what do you expect to find? Like, I think what they're trying to say is there was so much stuff in there that they didn't think maybe she could hide there, but they don't say that. They don't say there's absolutely nowhere for a person to hide right there, or nothing was knocked over, or I don't know, whatever. They just say it didn't, there was no indication anybody had been hiding there. No, duh, she's not there anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Again, just a bunch of not evidence.
Yes. But then, so that's not all. What bothered police the most was the shooting itself. Terry had told them that Jean had taken her to target practice only a few times before the shooting happened, but yet she shoots like a pro, according to the narrator and according to Randall Harris, who is a prosecutor. He said, turning her head, her eyes closed, in the dark, with no glasses or contacts, while she's moving, and she hits him 3 for 3, just doesn't make sense.
I don't know about that either. Like, if he's pretty close, maybe she didn't have her eyes closed. But that's the other thing. If she doesn't have her glasses or contacts in, like, and they said she had pretty bad eyesight, so...
Yeah, they said, what, 20/70?
Yeah.
I don't know what those numbers mean.
I don't know either.
That's not 20/20.
Yeah. And I don't know. And she also shot... She didn't hit him in the head. Well, I don't know. They don't say, do they?
Mm-mm.
I don't think they say anything about where the shots... Yeah.
I think they
were body shots.
That's kind of what it seems like. But if she's letting this person, who could just be a big blur to her. Like, all she says was a silhouette. So that's what I'm imagining she's seeing, just like a spot in the room. And it's coming towards her. And of course, when it comes towards you, it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. She lets it get 6 feet away, which would take up a lot of her visual space.
Right.
Well, if you shoot at that
center mass.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like you're probably going to hit. Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. I've only been shooting once or twice, maybe. And I hit the target every time. And
it's just a natural.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I had never done it before, and I was really surprised that I hit the target every time. Like, yeah, I don't know. It's just, that's not definitive proof. Like, you're going on a bunch of maybes.
Well, and really bearing down on him and being like, no, this is legit. This literally is the reason. It's like, you don't know that, though. There are lots of coincidences in the world that can happen, and it's like, it can't be explained. You couldn't try it again or do it again in a second time, even if you tried, but it happens.
Right. Yeah. Another thing they said was that if Terry had shot Jean at close range, like she said, she would have had blood on her or her clothing, and they didn't see any of that. And they said, in fact, she looked like, and she smelled like, she had just gotten out of the shower. And in the basement, they found evidence that she had showered before she called 911 and changed clothes. The basement shower was wet, and the dryer was full of damp clothes. But if somebody is 6 feet away from you, are you going to get blood on you?
I have no idea.
6 feet away is close, but also far, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. I just don't know. By dawn, they felt that they had enough evidence. All of this, they thought, was enough evidence to go before a judge, and they did get an arrest warrant. So just after 12 hours, or just 12 hours after Jean had been shot dead, Terry was arrested on a first-degree murder charge and evidence tampering. Her bail was set at $50,000. So by this point, people are hearing that Jean has died, and the community was rocked by this. I mean, he was a prominent figure in the community. A lot of people knew him. A lot of people liked him. He was really popular. And John Garcia said that to know Jean was to know that he was an honest and a good man, but what they were reading in the papers didn't make sense. And the paper released part of Terry's diary where she had made an entry talking about how he had been verbally abusing her for years. And, you know, a lot of people just didn't know that side of him because obviously you're not going to make that known, you know?
Well, yeah, and people can be one person in the public eye or mm-hmm. around friends or whatever and act completely different when you're behind closed doors.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're doing, again, we don't know what his financial situation stemmed from. He just owed a lot of money. I don't know if there was, like, you know, fraudulent activity or whatever. I don't know what it was that caused that. But there's because we cover these kinds of cases, we've seen a lot of situations where somebody looks like they're a very successful business person and whatever, and they are living above their means because they're trying to put on this facade, but they're doing some things that are not above board with their money. Like, you know, that's not totally out of the ordinary. Of course, you're not going to know about it if you're friends with him or whatever necessarily. He's not going to go around like parading that fact in front of everybody, you know? And exactly. The fact that he had been cheating on her for as long as he had, and just the way that he was going about all this stuff, like, again, yes, you think he's a very honest person, but
you don't know everything about him.
Right. Yeah. And this is not, certainly nobody deserves to be murdered in any way, shape, or form. Like, we don't think that at all. But I mean, if you cover as many cases as we do, you're going to run into somebody who did not live an absolute upstanding life, you know? And this is just the facts. He was cheating on his wife. he was doing some not above board stuff with his money. I don't know.
Yeah, not saying that it's reason for him to have been shot dead, but it's just the fact.
Yeah. The real shocker, though, came on August 21st when the local paper broke a huge story. So and they alluded to this in the beginning, in 1974, only a few months before Terry moved to Albuquerque and before she married Gene, Terry had shot and killed her second husband under eerily similar circumstances.
And that's literally all they say about that.
That's all they say. And then the narrator says, but shooting your second husband doesn't mean that you murdered your third. I'm like, I guess technically, but I feel a little bit like, doesn't it? Like, I don't know.
Well, and the way that you're presenting this,
yeah,
you know, like, it's not like, I don't know, maybe she just had a string of bad luck. They don't act like that. They're like, it's eerily similar.
Yeah.
How?
Exactly. How? What were the circumstances? And they're like, well, wouldn't you like to know? That's for me to know and you to not ever find out because this is early snapped. So Terry had never gone to trial for the shooting of her second husband. They said for lack of evidence. And we'll get into what we found out about it at the end, which is not a whole lot, but we'll talk about it. But this is just what they say in the episode. And all police had this time was a wet shower, damp clothes, and a hunch. Would that be enough to convict her?
I'm going to go ahead and say no, because that's literally three things that are maybes. They're like question marks in the air.
Yeah, it should not be enough to convict a person, that's for sure.
Yes.
Terry started becoming known around Albuquerque as the Black Widow. And this time it actually does make sense because we talked about in the Donna Somerville case how they were calling her a Black Widow when she'd
literally maybe only killed one person.
Right. Yeah. Because it just seems like a Black Widow would be like multiple partners, husbands, spouses, mm-hmm. whatever. So, of course, she says it was self-defense, but that's what she said before when she killed her second husband. In both cases, there were no eyewitnesses. There was very little physical evidence. So she goes to trial in May of 1998. And if she was convicted, she faced life in prison without the possibility of parole. In their opening statements, prosecutors claimed that Terry lured Gene to his death. Again, how? What records? Do you have phone records that she called him that night? You know, did they speak on the phone? Did they, what happened? I mean, I know this is the 90s, but you'll have phone records. Like, mm-hmm. why do they think that she lured him there? That they give no information. And they said that her motive was anger over his longtime lover and the verbal abuse.
I could see that. I mean, I could see her being angry about those two things.
Yeah, for sure.
Again, where's the proof, though?
Right, yeah. And she had that journal. They certainly mm-hmm. don't talk about a journal entry where she says, I'm going to murder my husband or anything like that. So, you know, obviously there was nothing in there that led them to believe that she'd planned it, but, or they would have used it. The defense said that it was Gene who had the motive to murder, not Terry. Randy McGinn said that Terry had no reason to kill him. She was leaving him. She had all the money. He had no money. She was getting on with her life. And from what it seems like in the episode, he took out a life insurance policy on her, but she didn't take one out on him.
Mm-mm.
So, I don't know. They said he was the one that couldn't let go, and he came after her for money. They maintained that the shooting was self-defense. Terry, they said, could not see who the shadowy intruder was that night, and when he followed her into the dark...
Why was he going into a bark park?
When he went into the bark park, when he followed her into the dark basement that night, she had no choice but to shoot. And, you know, like we said, all the evidence that the prosecution had was circumstantial. And they also could not bring in any information about the shooting of her second husband because she'd not been indicted on it. She'd never gone to trial. So they couldn't bring
that in. Yeah, but what they decided to do was to go after her story, the story that she tells of the events that happened that night.
Yeah.
So they started out with the testing of the front door to see if it creaked, and it didn't, like her story said.
Yeah. They also said that Terry wasn't the fearful type, and they called in a neighbor to testify that she rarely locked her doors, and they even had recent neighborhood break-ins, and she was just like, I don't care. I don't even lock my doors. I'm not scared.
I feel like that's just so ridiculous, because I'm like, hey, this lady said that Terry never locks her doors. Let's put her on the stand.
How does she know?
Exactly.
Yeah, like... Yeah.
Did she go checking? Is she the person who's breaking into everybody's house?
Yeah. How do you know who locks their doors and who doesn't? They said there were other inconsistencies. They said the basement wasn't even that dark. They said that there was ambient light coming down the stairwell. So if somebody was standing on the stairs, you could like totally see who they were.
If you have good vision.
Right. Well, and he said they tested this. He's like, I am similar, like, height and stature to Gene. So I stood at the top of the stairs, and everybody that was in the basement was like, oh, yeah, that's Joe Foster. I'm like, okay, but you guys came as a group, and everybody knew who was there. And you could also deduce it was you because you're not in the basement with them. Like, that's not a test. Like, I just
exactly.
don't. Again, no. That's all, like, totally subjective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and those people probably, yeah, they had their glasses on if they wore them, contacts in if they wore them. Like, it does not make any sense.
No.
They also said that Terry could apparently see well enough to avoid Jean's blood. So they said that when she went up the stairs to call 911, she stepped over him and over the blood, but didn't step in it. And there was a lot of blood. So they're saying if she... can't see anything like she says. How did she avoid him and avoid the blood by stepping over him?
Mm-hmm.
Which they said the only way that that's possible, like they're saying that lends itself to she changed her clothes and whatever. But even if she, but they're saying she took the shower in the basement. She put the clothes drying in the basement and then she hopped over his body and still didn't get it on her new clothes.
That's ridiculous.
That actually doesn't match up with what they're trying to say to me.
No, not at all.
But the defense cross-examined all of the witnesses, and they really did a great job picking apart the case. They asked a police officer if he found blood when he tested the shower and the clothes, and he didn't find any. So they're like, because they said that she got in the shower with her clothes on, washed the blood away, and then put them in the dryer to dry them, and then blow dried her hair. And if that was the case, they said, you should have found blood in that shower and you didn't, so you don't have any evidence that she washed it away. You're just guessing.
Exactly. Then they called a neighbor to establish the time of the shooting, and prosecutors called a neighbor to establish the time of shooting. So defense on cross simply asked how long it took police to arrive after the shooting. And the neighbor says within 5 to 6 minutes, she heard police sirens. And defense is like, nobody can take a shower with all your clothes on, get out of the shower, put those clothes washing and drying, blow dry your hair, put on a fresh pair of clothes, haul your tuchus upstairs and wait for police.
Exactly.
That's a small window of time.
Yeah, because what they were saying is, you know, they're trying to say that he'd been dead for some time because she did all the stuff in between. And the neighbor is like, and what makes this especially damning for the prosecution is it's their witness. You know, this isn't a defense witness. So they should have done the work to, you can never, ever, ever bring a witness that you don't know what they're going to answer, you know, and you need to anticipate what the cross-examination is going to be. And obviously they didn't do that because this person is saying, I heard the shots. And it was only 5 or 6 minutes between those shots. And when the sirens, I could hear them pulling in. So, yeah, you've just obliterated her opportunity to clean up the scene, which is their main evidence.
Of your
timeline's gone.
You know, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So when they called their own witnesses, the defense just attacked the prosecution point by point. First, they said that Terry did exhibit every sign of being frightened by intruders. She had put bars on her doors with locks. She'd had 9 incidences at her house where people had broken in. They also documented the darkness in the basement. Testimony at trial showed that it was 6 to 10 times darker than the average movie theater. That's pretty dark.
That to me Well, yeah, that's very dark, but that to me is a more scientific approach to how dark the basement was rather than having like the team of police be like, it wasn't that dark.
Yeah, I didn't think it was all that dark, and I could tell that the one of the three people that we came with was the one that was standing on the stairs.
Yeah, we saw that he was wearing his black shirt like he was earlier that day, we saw.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense. Terry also didn't have her eyeglasses or contacts in, which again, the question that brings up for me is, what was she doing at her desk? Was she sitting at her desk? Was she doing work, or was she just walking by and heard the door? You know, like you said, yeah. I don't know. As for the blood, they said that she did step in blood on her way up the basement stairs. They said she got some on her foot.
Yeah, Randy McGinn said that she did, in fact, get some on the heel of her foot when she was running up the stairs.
And then they went in for the kill. They turned their sights to Gene. The defense said that he came to the house that night armed to kill Terry. He had an untraceable gun cocked and loaded in his hand. I don't know if they said in his hand, but so the gun they found laying next to him, I at first thought it was her gun because she said she threw it down when she ran upstairs. But was the gun that was laying next to him, was that the gun that he had brought?
We will never know.
We'll never know. But in the crime scene photos, you do see a gun next to him. I don't know if it's his gun or not, but the defense says that Gene was armed when he was there. He had a gun that was not traceable. I'm assuming meaning he bought it illegally and he was hoping that it would not be traced back to him. You know, it wasn't registered or whatever. But that's all we get about that. We get no other information. So I don't know. I'm assuming that's part of the court case, though. I mean, I'm assuming it's true because it's part of the court case. And I'm sure that they had more documentation to prove that in court. But in this episode, that's all we get about that. But he was armed when he went there with a gun that could not be traced to him. That's pretty concerning.
They also claim that Gene had the motive to kill, that he had all these debts he couldn't pay off, no money, and that she had called off the refinance, which is exactly motive to kill because he had just taken out that insurance policy on her.
Yeah, which she was like, wow, that's irresponsible of him. I'm glad he's finally doing something, you know, grown up. And he literally took out a $100,000 life insurance policy on her and then shows up at her house late at night with a gun that can't be traced to him. That seems like maybe he's trying to get a life insurance payout.
Exactly.
And she didn't have one on him, so she doesn't gain anything.
Mm-hmm. They call Terry to the stand, and she talked about being the happy political wife while Gene verbally abused her in private. She said that despite her pleas, he would not give up his affair, which we've already talked about. And then she said she wouldn't give him the equity in her house when she told him that she wouldn't give him the equity in her house, she said that he threatened to kill her dog.
Yeah. That's messed up. Totally. If it's true.
The thing everyone was most surprised by was the fact that Gene had a public face and a private face, that they didn't know about the private face. And then she tells the defense attorney that the police were, or the judge or the jury, everybody, that the police were dead wrong about the door creaking, that it did. That, yeah, they were right about the shower being wet, and that's because there's the faucet in the shower leaks. Mm-hmm. So it's always going to be wet.
Yeah, our shower in our master bathroom is always a little bit wet because our faucet leaks. It's always wet.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then she says, oh, and also the damp clothes in the dryer were a load of clothes that I washed earlier that evening. And yeah, maybe I did smell fresh. I took a shower earlier. Like, all of these things are true. Y'all are just putting them at different times in the evening that you have no proof.
Yeah, and the fact that the other witness said it was only a few minutes between the shots and the sirens, like, there's no way she could have had. And they alluded to, or I don't know, maybe these were stock photos, I can't remember now, but it looked like the laundry they showed were like sheets.
Sheets.
Yeah.
All it was like clothes. Sheets to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the prosecutor was trying to bait her to argue with him and all this stuff. She wasn't taking it. She kept her cool. And he's like, I couldn't get her to argue with me or whatever.
Yeah, he was like, she wouldn't touch me with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah. And closing arguments were made on June 2nd, 1998. On June 5th, 1998, after three days of deliberation, the jury delivered their verdict, and they found her not guilty. And Jean's wife, first wife, shouted from the back of the courtroom, "You got away with it again, didn't you?" And the prosecutor said that right after the verdict, pretty much, that like, it's, or I don't know, when she was leaving or whatever, that he looked at her and she winked at him, like, right after the verdict was read.
He was like, "I'll never forget that."
Yeah. Like, that seems kind of weird.
Yeah. It's almost, like, too perfect, like a movie, you know? Like,
yeah, especially if you're completely innocent, that is a kind of a weird thing to do. Kind of a cocky thing to do, I guess. But to this day, Terry says that she fired in self-defense and she no longer lives in New Mexico. So that's it. And we did try to find information about the first, it was her second husband, but the first one that she shot in self-defense. But they said that that husband had gone to, at that time she lived in a trailer with him. He was in the trailer or whatever, and he'd had, what was it, a homemade blackjack, which is like a baton. Yeah, and it was like lead filled. And he had attacked her with it, and she shot him in self-defense. And they said that she was hospitalized because her injuries were so severe. And they presented all that to a grand jury, and they elected not to indict because they didn't think, I think they believed her story that she was attacked.
I think, I don't know what Snap's motive, or like what their plan is for all this. Like, are they just trying to show other cases and kind of mix it up? Because it seems like what they're doing is they're running out of cases where people are actually guilty, and but they're not giving all of the facts to show that this doesn't belong on Snapped. She's, I mean, I don't know, just in my personal opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
This episode, this case doesn't necessarily belong on Snapped.
Yeah. Yeah, if their whole bag is women who murdered their husbands, you know, like,
or whoever, in a fit of rage or guilt, or I mean greed or whatever.
Yeah, like if this is a true self-defense case, and she, and it was a technically a justified homicide, the way they played it off in the episode was like, well, she's killed two husbands this way, which I mean definitely does sound bad. But once you actually look at the facts, I mean, it kind of does look like she was telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. It's definitely a weird one, because they don't make it seem like she was innocent.
Exactly.
Yeah. But that's it.
There you have it. So there, if you have any opinions or differing opinions, you know, whether or not you agree, disagree, whatever, we would love to hear about them. So if you want to shoot on over to our Instagram after this is posted, I'm sure you can't hear it without it being posted. we will have the picture of her up, and we will kind of carry on a discussion there if you guys want to.
Yeah, definitely. And we will catch you next week.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.